Hola, Sultán. Roa Namka Tata Nyanto, Simjin Tamje Je Tonto, Shirab Da Nijin Tarsenba, Sanje Je Komba Dobrasa, Teiche Do Tambe Chula, Tusan Gomzum Je, Sambar Jeo Nyambe, Samba Sanjo Jodo, Tujibo Mundo Donde Sambo.
Before listening to the teachings, please give rise to the supreme motivation of bodhicitta. This means that for the benefit of all sentient beings who are as limitless in number as the sky is vast in its extent, we aim to bring our love and compassion to their ultimate perfection and our wisdom realizing the true nature of reality to its ultimate perfection. To do this is given the name the state of complete and perfect Buddhahood.
Tela kan khepar sabe tambe chu jirimba ne sab ju vam so jib jin sambang gom bo te ni jin zebe tekwa jin bu ju lama se ju lama se chu da chu ni nambar zeba.
And out of all of the topics that comprise the genuine Dharma, tonight we will begin to look at the text that was composed by the one who is known as the Lord of the 10th Bodhisattva Ground, the great protector, the noble Maitreya. The text is called Distinguishing Phenomena and Pure Being.
Damn. Papa Tumi Ji, Jibjun Sambangombo, Lo Juni La Drupte, Sambangombo, Monsum to Sharzikte, Zimdru Jin Dinje, Garden to Treaty, then Sambe Chu Chuding and the Sumbari.
The text was transmitted by the Lord Maitreya to the noble Asanga after Asanga did the deity practice meditation on the Lord Maitreya for 12 years. He was able to meet Maitreya face to face, and through Maitreya's miraculous powers, Maitreya took Asanga to the pure realm of Tushita, where he taught him this text along with the four others that make up what are known as the five treatises of Maitreya.
Deyang papa thomi yinyi kunchi chetar somo chorta thomi chi sambango bo chetar drupe drupten jar shanjar ko lo chawa ke shigre lo thoni shigre de lela.
And the way in which Asanga came to do this practice and the story of that and how he was able to meet Maitreya is something that the translator will now recount for you directly. So the story of Asanga actually begins with Asanga's mother. Asanga's mother was a Buddhist nun first, and her name was Prakashashila. She lived at a time when the Buddha's teachings of the Abhidharma in particular were in danger of disappearing, because the tradition at that time in ancient India was that the different philosophical traditions' masters would meet in debate, and whoever lost the debate would, together with all of that person's followers, convert to the other tradition. That was the way that they admitted that they had been logically defeated. And sometimes there came very, very intelligent and clever Hindu teachers who were able to take a lot of the Buddha's teachings and seamlessly integrate them with their own, and they were smarter than the Buddhist teachers, and so then droves of Buddhists became Hindu, and the Buddha's teachings were in danger of disappearing. So Prakashashila, this nun, saw that the Buddha's teachings were in this danger, and she thought to herself, well, I am born a woman, so there's not much that I in this body can do to help the Buddha's teachings, because in India the rule was that women were not allowed to participate in debate. This changed in Tibet for a short time, but the women were too smart, and they were going to defeat all the monks in Tibet in debate. And so that's one story of how the tradition of like clapping your hands really loud and stomping your feet started, is that the men had no other way to win a debate except to scream and yell and and scare the women from the debate ground. So this is one story actually in Tibet of how this tradition started of clapping your hands like that. But it didn't matter, because in Tibet there are many great women masters and there are many great women debaters like Machik Labdrung. There are famous stories about her debating so many different pandits from India and Tibet and defeating them all. But in any event, in this story, Prakasha Shila knew that she couldn't debate, and so she thought to herself, well, what can I do? Well, I can give birth to sons. And in this way, have sons who will grow up, study the Dharma, and defend it. So she did that. She coupled with two different men, first with a member of the king's class, the Kshatriya class it's called. She gave birth to a Sangha. And after meeting a nice Brahmin, then they had a son who was Vasubandhu. And so these two sons grew up, and when they came of age, they asked their mother what their father's profession was, because that was the tradition in India, to follow your father's line of work. So they went to their mother and they said, "Mother, mother, please tell me what is our father's profession so we can follow it." And Prakasha Shila said to them, "My two dear boys, I did not give birth to you so you could follow your father's profession. No, no. You must go and study the Buddha Dharma." And so they did. And so Vasubandhu went to Kashmir to study the Abhidharma there. And a Sangha decided that what he would do would be to meditate on Maitreya, in the hopes of meeting Maitreya and receiving his teachings. So a Sangha went to a mountain called Kukutapada, and in a cave there practiced the deity practice of Maitreya first for 6 years. And after practicing for 6 years, he had no results. Zero. Mm-hmm. He didn't even have a good dream. So a Sangha at that point decided that his practice wasn't going anywhere, and he thought, "I'm not going to get anything out of this," so he left. And he went walking down the mountain, and he met a man who had a huge iron bar, and he was rubbing it with a piece of cotton cloth. So a Sangha was very intrigued by this. So he asked the man, "What are you doing?" And the man said, "Dude, like, I need a needle, man. So I'm just going to rub this bar till I get a needle." And a Sangha couldn't believe it. He thought, look at the diligence of these worldly people, how diligent they are in the most meaningless of activities. They thought, if this person can be that diligent to rub an iron bar to get a needle, certainly I can be more diligent in my Dharma practice. So he turned around and he went up the mountain and he sat back down for another 3 years. Again, nothing. Not even one good sign for 3 whole years. So then again he thought, "I give up, I quit." And he started walking down the mountain, and this time he came to a man who was standing next to a huge boulder that was so high, it was like 10 stories high, and he was rubbing it with this feather. He was dipping the feather in water, and he was like rubbing this boulder. So a Sangha again said, "What are you doing?" So the man said, "Well," he said, "you know, the sun doesn't shine on my house." You know, so it's this boulder in the way. And I've got this great little house down here, but it doesn't get any sun. So I'm just going to rub this boulder until the sun starts shining on it. And a Sangha again was so impressed by the incredible energy worldly people put into stupid things. And so he turned around again and went back up the mountain. And again, and he sat in this cave for 3 years. Three more years, again, nothing. Zero. And so he said, that's it. I don't care what happens. I'm finished. And he went back down the mountain. And this time, when he was walking down the road, he came and he saw this female dog, very angry, like trying to bite him. But the thing about it was the dog's back was totally this huge open wound. And it was filled with maggots. You know, this dog was this festering sore of maggots. And all the while, the dog was like trying to crawl and bite him. And the Sangha was totally overcome by compassion. And so he took out a knife and he cut a piece of his leg and he put it and gave it to the dog to eat. And at the same time, he thought, well, now I have to get these maggots out of this dog's, I have to help clean this dog's wound. And so he thought, but if I can pick them up and put them in my leg, but if I do that, then I'll crush the maggots. So then he thought, well, the only thing I can do is to move them with my tongue. He tried to do it, but every time he got close, you know, the smell and the sight of this festering wound, he couldn't do it. So finally thought, well, I just have to close my eyes and go for it. So he closed his eyes and he started bending down. His tongue touched the ground. And his tongue never touched the dog, it just touched the ground. And then he opened his eyes and he looked up, and there was Maitreya. Standing in this halo of light, you know, with the music going, and he looked up at Maitreya, and his first reaction was, "You are so mean! I did your practice for 12 years, and you never came. You're so cruel." And Maitreya looked down at him, you know, the music going, "Ooh, doo, doo." He said, "That is not true. You and I have never been separate. But due to your obscurations being so intense, you could not see me. Through practicing for 12 years, your obscurations diminished a little bit, and you were able to see me as the dog. But then you gave rise to great compassion, and that cleared away your obscurations enough so you could see me face to face." And Asanga still must have looked quite disbelieving at this, because then Maitreya said, "If you don't believe me, take me on your shoulders and carry me through town." So he did. Asanga put Maitreya on his shoulders and he took him through the town and he went up to everybody in the market and he said, "Hey, who's sitting on my shoulders?" And everybody looked who he asked, just looked at him and said, "You know, what are you talking about?" Nobody saw anything. Until finally he came to one old woman in the market, who had purified her obscurations a little bit, and she said to him, "Son, why are you carrying around that dead dog?" And after that, Asanga was fully convinced. And Maitreya took him to Tushita and taught him the five treatises of Maitreya. And the point of the moral of this story is to show how powerful compassion is. One instant of Asanga's great compassion was stronger than 12 years of non-stop retreat. It's hard to believe that compassion could be that strong. But when we hear this story, we see that 12 years of retreat are not as powerful as one instant of truly great compassion. And that's something for us to remember. The five treatises of Maitreya that Maitreya taught Asanga in Tushita Heaven are first what are called the two ornaments, the ornament of direct realization, or the Abhisamayalankara, and the ornament of the Mahayana Sutras, also called the Sutralankara, and then the two distinctions, which are distinguishing phenomena and pure being, this text, and distinguishing the middle from the extremes. And finally, the treatise on the Buddha nature. So this is from the two distinctions, this text that we're going to start looking at, distinguishing phenomena and pure being.
Teta chuta chuni kebe keza chuta chuni nini nili chune dene zumze ninan dan zumze ninan la denbar shembale songe songe korbe chula chuki jebare.
The title, Distinguishing Phenomena and Pure Being. So what are phenomena? Phenomena are defined as everything included in dualistic perception, meaning that whenever there is an appearance of an object, perceived object, different from a perceiving subject, whenever there is that dualistic split, then that's what phenomena are.
Chuni ne zungze ni la ni lindekin juza juzi lindebe semje ne lo la tene chuni kijibare.
And pure being is the true nature of mind that transcends this duality. Because these appearances of a dualistic split between object and subject don't really exist. They don't exist in genuine reality. And so pure being, the true nature of mind, transcends perceived and perceiver, transcends any object to which you give a name and any name given to that
object. Chunyi jebar keba la domjin dor tenba, domtsak dor tenba tang, domtsak ton teni jebar keba nile, tangbo ni namba chukki chunyi la jubwa la namay ba te, senyi kundu ne ba tang, nebar jeta rikba tang, jesu chenita te tangi nebar song lan jubwa so hisa wa song.
And from the way that the text is set out is that it gives first concise explanations of phenomena and pure being, and then extensive explanations. We're going to begin to look at the extensive explanation of pure being itself. This starts on page 113. The expanded explanation of pure being has six different sections, six main sections. And so first there is a brief presentation of the headings of these six sections, and then the expanded explanation of them. And the root text for the brief explanation of the headings reads, "Through introducing traits and a ground at all times, definitive verification as well as encounter, recollection and immersion into its core, this six-point approach to pure being is unsurpassed." If you don't have the book, then you should write down the root verses. So I'll read it again slowly so you can take it down. Through introducing traits and a ground at all times, definitive verification as well as encounter, recollection, and immersion into its core. This six-point approach to pure being is unsurpassed.
Namba droge junye la joba la nameba Tenye kundu neba Nebaran jita reba Jisa tendan dedan Nevarasan la jope su Sati nyambutu.
Let's recite it together once. Through introducing traits and a ground at all times, definitive verification as well as encounter, recollection and immersion into its core, this six-point approach to pure being is unsurpassed.
Don namba droge chunyi don dambe denba lan jokba lan me bate kanyi don namba drogo te.
And the commentary reads, "This six-point approach to pure being, or the true nature of reality, is unsurpassed, since anyone who has understood these 6 points will easily comprehend all qualities without exception related to the process of refinement." So that refers to the path leading to the fruition, the ultimate fruition of enlightenment. And how does this approach lead to such a result? It does so through introducing the student to the first of these 6 points, namely the knowledge of the defining traits of pure being, as well as to the last 5, which constitute the sole ground or basis for gaining access to such traits. To look more closely at the last 5, they consist of that focus with respect to which there is a ground or basis for pure being at all times, the definitive verification of pure being itself, as well as the direct encounter with it, the renewed recollection of precisely this direct encounter again and again, and immersion into its very core, meaning the final breakthrough to that nature which is actually present, the attainment of Buddhahood, the path of no more training.
Nyimba donje donje tava yendo drupo te soso sosur sheba la tangbun zinyine zinyin donne jeda yin.
Then there is the expanded explanation of these 6, and first the defining characteristics, point number one. And here the root text reads, the defining traits, in brief, are just as they are. The defining traits, in brief, are just as they are.
Chunyi namzangji, chunyiya namzangjin chinyi de gangjana, kongdon doro du de tenbe, kapso de yinyi, de konanyi, zungzi nyi dang chargin, juza juzi dang chavar tenba, jetawa yin de kibarasawo.
And the commentary reads, if one is seeking to know the defining traits of pure being, the state of complete refinement, the true nature of reality, suchness, one should know that they are just as these are described in the brief summary above, where the suchness is taught as being free of four factors, a perceived and so on. This refers us back to the concise explanation, which if you just want to take down a note, it's on page 77. And here it describes the defining characteristics of pure being as being that which transcends four things. So what are these four things? Perceived and perceiver. And an object that can be expressed with a name, and the name given to that. Pure being, the true nature of reality, is what is beyond these four.
Nyeba nene, nene chunam tamje dang, sonram dode tamje do.
Then the second of the six headings about pure being is the ground. And the root verse reads, the ground consists of the whole of phenomena and supreme teachings, the whole of the sutra collections. The ground consists of the whole of phenomena and supreme teachings, the whole of the sutra collections. Here we're looking at, now we know that what the defining characteristics of pure being are. And so now what is its ground? What is this, what do these characteristics relate to? The commentary explains, the ground is asserted to consist of the subject taught and its formulation, meaning what is being described, and the way of describing it. So first, the subject taught is the whole of phenomena, all the phenomena there are, meaning all objects of knowledge comprising affliction and refinement, or samsara and nirvana. That's the ground of pure being, the true nature of reality. Its formulation, its description, is found in the whole of the sutra collections, which consist of the 12 branches of the supreme teachings of the Buddha. The reason the term ground is applied to the first of these, all phenomena of samsara and nirvana, why are these phenomena the ground of pure being? It is that nirvana is attained in a conventional sense through such means as the adoption or rejection relevant to any phenomenon, and in genuine reality, through gaining a firm understanding of there being no phenomena on which to focus. So why are all phenomena the ground of pure being? Because conventionally, we relate to phenomena in terms of, in order to realize pure being, adopting some, doing some things, and not doing other things. And then in terms of the genuine nature of reality, we realize pure being by realizing that actually in genuine reality, phenomena are imperceptible. The term ground is applied to the second, the teachings, because freedom from unclarity about how to practice the path is gained through the pursuit of listening to and reflecting over the supreme teachings. So how do we know what in conventional reality to adopt and reject? How do we gain an understanding and realization of how it is that phenomena are ultimately not to be found? Through listening, reflecting, and meditating on the teachings. That's why the teachings are included in the ground of pure being.
Dela, sabje tambo la tsikje jik ma do ma do nyeba le nyin do. Nyambo tsik gang ba som de nyambo tina.
Asa.
Yeah.
Konto dri yin sare. Dri song sambay.
Yeah, tene dong.
Asa. The first The first heading only has one line of root verse, and the second only two, so that's why it would be good if we recite these together now. The defining traits in brief are just as they are. The ground consists of the whole of phenomena, and supreme teachings, the whole of the sutra collections.
Then sabje somba ne barnje bam jolan chebane tela ne barnje bane tikwa chembu do dela tembe tsorje yisebe debe jolan tamje do.
We've now reached the third heading, and in terms of the development here, first we learned the defining characteristics of pure being, and then the ground that pure being relates to, and now the text is going to take us through the stages of realizing it, how to realize it. The first of these stages is called definitive verification. And here the root verse reads, "The term definitive verification of this refers to the whole of the path of application composed of appropriate mental cultivation based on the sutra collections of Mahayana." The term definitive verification of this refers to the whole of the path of application composed of appropriate mental cultivation based on the sutra collections of Mahayana.
Tela samba nying ji dan denbe tekpa chenpo sanjo jo de sem je ne sunan je cho saba tan je cholan du du.
It is described in the Mahayana that there are five paths. And the first of these is called the path of accumulation. And this covers the time that starts when you first give rise to bodhicitta. And then all the time that as a beginning practitioner you focus mainly on doing things that are positive, that are what are called an accumulation of merit. Since you focus on an accumulation of merit, it's called the path of accumulation. And if we look at how the six transcendent practices or six paramitas break down in terms of the two accumulations of merit and wisdom, then generosity, ethics, and patience, the first three practices, are included in the accumulation of merit. And the last, wisdom, or knowledge, is the accumulation of wisdom. And then the middle two, the fourth and the fifth, which are joyous diligence and concentration, these are necessary for both merit and wisdom.
Yeah, chu ten dang, lagang yewa dang, Tene, Chuji, Tsopa, Tsopata, Sonra, Pechaso, Taking Yamba, Yamba, Lasopa, Tamje, Sonanje, Tsoji, Konsu, Degre.
And also, when you help to construct stupas or temples, shrine rooms, when you work at a Dharma center, when you help to write or to publish Dharma books, all of these activities are also part of the accumulation of merit. And especially like now, at a time when the Dharma is beginning to flourish, then when you work at a Dharma center, when you help the Dharma center's activities, even when it's difficult, if you work at a Dharma center, work hard, then all of that is included in the accumulation of merit. Because especially when the Dharma is just starting out in a certain place, Dharma centers are very important. Because if there's no Dharma center, there's no place for people to meet, there's no place for people to come and practice together, to listen to teachings together. And so Dharma centers at the beginning of the Dharma starting out are essential. And so it's a fact that for those who are the directors of Dharma centers and those who work at Dharma centers, however difficult it is for them, that much more merit do they accumulate. And it's the same for Dharma practitioners. However much difficulty they have to endure in order to practice the Dharma, that much more does their merit increase. And at the same time, one is doing all of these positive, virtuous things on the path of accumulation in order to accumulate merit. Then one listens to teachings about pure being, the true nature of reality, and reflects on them to gain certainty in them. And then, when you get to the path of application, then you really start to apply yourself to meditating on what you have gained certainty in on the path of accumulation. And so that's where we start here. And the commentary reads, "The term definitive verification of the meaning of this is explained as referring to the whole of the path of application, which is composed of appropriate mental cultivation based on the intended meaning of the sutra collections of Mahayana. If one wonders why the term definitive verification is used, it indicates that through cultivating the mind on the paths of accumulation and application, by nurturing the three types of precise knowledge, listening, reflecting, and meditating, in accord with the content of the sutra collections, the meaning of pure being is definitively verified, that is to say, confirmed." So definitive verification means mental cultivation, meaning you use your mind, you use your power of analysis to gain certainty in what the true nature of reality is, and then you meditate on that. You cultivate these three types of knowledge, listening, reflecting, and meditating, and you definitively verify, you confirm for yourself, you identify for yourself what is the true nature of your mind. That's the activity you perform on these first two paths.
Jorla ki jo gobe jinse ne jorla te toni tenji chordo gombe.
These first two paths are paths of are the paths of ordinary sentient beings. They are the paths on which you relate to the true nature of reality, not yet as direct experience, but as an abstract image. But by applying yourself to gaining certainty in the true nature of reality and then meditating on it, that is what connects you with the paths of the noble beings where you have direct realization. And so that's where this path, the second path, gets its name. Jorlam in Tibetan, you could say it means application, meaning you apply yourself in this way. It also means junction or connection, because it's by doing this that you make the connection with the direct realization of the Noble Ones. Together, the term definitive verification of this refers to the whole of the path of application, composed of appropriate mental cultivation based on the sutra collections of Mahayana.
Sabji yeba thon lam ke bani rekpa yanda tatob se thon lam je ngun som chi chod te ye ni top je nyan su nyuwa kang yin ba wo.
Then the fourth heading describes encounter, and the root verse here reads, the encounter attained because of authentic view is the path of vision, on which the suchness attained is in a fashion direct, whatever experienced. The encounter attained because of authentic view is the path of vision, on which the suchness attained is in a fashion direct, whatever experienced.
Rekpa ki sabani yurchi dandan to bikhirab ji chin le te megi.
And here the commentary reads, the fourth point is called encounter, contact, because authentic view, which transcends the world, has been attained, has been achieved with the eye of knowledge as the seer. Here, the eye of knowledge, or your eye of prajna, sees the true nature of reality directly. So you have contact with it. This is the path of vision on which the object, suchness, pure being, purged of all defilements, eliminated through seeing, is actually attained during meditative equipoise in a fashion which is wholly direct, not merely as an abstract idea. So here, purged of all defilements, eliminated through seeing, that means that in order to see the true nature of reality directly, you have to get rid of the obscurations that stand between you and your realization of it. And the way you do that is by practicing on these first two paths, where you meditate on the true nature of reality still as an abstract notion. It's not direct experience yet, but you do it in an increasingly more subtle way. And that's what eliminates the obscurations until you no longer relate to it as just a conceptual abstraction, but rather as part of direct experience. Whatever is experienced, the commentary continues, during the post-meditative state is then seen from the perspective of authentic view. Meaning that in your meditation, you have direct realization of the true nature of reality. As a result of that, when you get up, in your post-meditation, you don't cling to anything as being truly existent. You relate to phenomena like someone would in a dream when they knew they were dreaming and had total certainty of that.
Tene tolan to papa sato de seno korwachi danze sebe seno korwachi ji jile sadam sabre yina ya sancho sambada samanam ni ji wang kan kor ji jin simjin simjin ji don sebre.
This path that's being described here is then the third path, the path of seeing. And because on this path of seeing, you realize the true nature of reality directly, you no longer take things to be truly existent, then you don't have any ego clinging anymore. You don't cling to the self. You don't believe that the self truly exists. Since you don't do that, then you don't accumulate any causes to be reborn in samsara. But you still are reborn in samsara out of your compassion. The bodhisattvas take rebirth again and again in samsara to be of benefit to sentient beings, not because they're compelled by their neuroses or disturbing states of mind to do it, but because of their compassion. And the difference between how ordinary beings experience samsara and noble bodhisattvas experience it is illustrated by this example of a dream. Ordinary beings relate to samsara as if they're dreaming and they don't know they're dreaming. Noble beings relate to it as if they're dreaming and they know they're dreaming. The fifth heading is the stage of recollection. And here the root text reads, although reality has been seen by awareness, recollection, the path of meditation, composed of factors inducing enlightenment, is needed to eliminate the stains. Although reality has been seen by awareness, recollection, the path of meditation, composed of factors inducing enlightenment, is needed to eliminate the stains. The commentary reads, although reality, pure being, has already been seen directly and realized by intimate, detailed self-awareness on the previous stage, what is here referred to as recollection is composed of all those factors inducing enlightenment that enable one to recollect and realize this again and again throughout a process of repeated habituation. So this is saying that what you see on the path of seeing, the previous path, is pure being, also called emptiness, also called Dharma Dhatu, which means phenomena's basic space, basic nature, also called the true nature of reality, the expanse. So this you see with intimate, detailed self-awareness. It's called intimate because it is the mind intimately aware of its own nature. And it's detailed because it has the knowledge that this is the nature of every phenomenon that there is. And so you see that, but then that's not enough just to see it once. Because we have to realize it again and again, make the realization deeper and deeper throughout a process of repeated habituation. And this is the path of meditation. So meditation is a word in Tibetan, gom, which has many different meanings. They're all related. Because to meditate also means to habituate yourself to it, to familiarize yourself, to cultivate. And by doing this, you practice in order to eliminate all those stains which only meditation can remove. So by realizing the true nature of reality directly on the path of seeing, the bodhisattva removes some obscurations, but not all, because it's not perfect realization yet. It becomes perfect realization through this process of recollection, of repeated habituation.
Papasala, Tundan Tumba ni tope ngoni yeva minaya. Jitop to suna jitso sakurta.
And these two paths of the noble bodhisattvas, the path of seeing and the path of meditation, are divided as well into the stages of the 10 bhumis, or the 10 grounds. And what we need to understand about this presentation is that ultimately there's no difference between one ground and the next. The distinctions don't exist from the perspective of genuine reality, but from the perspective of the post-meditative state, you can identify that the bodhisattvas concentrate on different practices. Different practices become excellent in a successive way. And also, they purify more and more of the obscurations. And so these stages of doing that are demarcated into these 10 grounds. They're called grounds because it's like the ground is the source of the qualities. Like ground, from the ground come the flowers. So it is that from each ground come different qualities of the bodhisattvas. And each of these 10 grounds has a different name. So the first one is called excellent joy. And the second is the stainless. The third is the luminous. The fourth is the radiant. The fifth is difficult to overcome. Because so the bodhisattvas at that stage are very difficult for the maras to try to do anything to. So they are difficult to overcome or to conquer. The sixth stage is called the approach. The seventh is called gone far. The eighth is the unmoving. Ninth is excellent intelligence. And tenth is a cloud of dharma. The first of these bodhisattva grounds in the standard presentation, excellent joy, is equivalent to the path of seeing, and then the next 9 are the path of meditation.
Tabasa
On the first bodhisattva ground, you give up clinging to things as being truly existent. But then, even on the path of meditation, on the first six of these, of the grounds that make up that path, meaning the second to the seventh ground, you still have what's called clinging to characteristics, meaning that you perceive things to have certain characteristics, even though you don't believe them to be truly existent, you still perceive dualistic characteristics of phenomena. And so these are called the six impure grounds, because you still have this clinging to characteristics. On the eighth ground, the eighth, ninth, and tenth, you don't have clinging to characteristics anymore. All you have is what is called clinging to duality, mere dualistic appearance. And so these last three grounds are called the pure bodhisattva grounds, because there's only one tiny obscuration left. If we look at how these ten bodhisattva grounds relate to the different masters of this era in terms of what they have achieved, then Nagarjuna, for example, was prophesied by the Buddha to be one who would in this age reach the first bodhisattva ground, and the noble Asanga, the third bodhisattva ground.
All the reality has been seen by awareness, recollection, the path of meditation, composed of factors inducing enlightenment, is needed to eliminate the stains.
Drupa la tharto ke ne yon su jurba. Ne yon su jurba ngobo ngoy zonga ta.
The last heading is describing the stage, the final stage of enlightenment, which is called complete immersion into its core, into the core of pure being. And this has two sections. First, the character of the ultimate transformation that this entails, this enlightenment is all about. And second, the expanded explanation of the distinctive features of this ultimate transformation. So the first of these is the character or the quality of ultimate transformation. And here the root verse reads, here immersion into its core complete is suchness rendered free of any stain, where all appear exclusively as suchness. And this completes the transformation as well. Here, immersion into its core complete is suchness rendered free of any stain, where all appear exclusively as suchness, and this completes the transformation as well.
Tambo, chutam jeje, kondeje chutam jeje, nelo, shilo, tegini, tontabedemba.
Here is the point at which immersion into the core of that suchness, which is the abiding nature of all phenomena of samsara and nirvana, has been completed. The abiding nature of all phenomena means the way that they really are, their nature in genuine reality, not just what they appear to be, but their actual pure being. This is the suchness, the expanse, the genuine reality, rendered free of any superficial stain. Now, these stains don't exist in the nature of reality itself. They are superficial to it, meaning that they only exist in a relative sense as something which prevents us from realizing the nature that is pure being. So these stains take the form of first clinging to things as being truly existent, and then more subtly clinging to characteristics, and finally the most subtle of all, dualistic appearance. But since none of these stains actually exist, then they are only superficial and they can be removed. If they existed in genuine reality, then we'd be stuck. But they are only superficial, they don't truly exist, and so by bringing together the right causes and conditions, they can be eliminated.
Lower trupe treman pakcha dan cheba sede semji chunyi yang chuyen ngondu churpe kapso tin nenjan tharte gore.
And so the commentary continues, this is the suchness rendered free of any superficial stain, where all phenomena whose fundamental being and appearance have been reconciled in every respect appear exclusively as suchness. So that means that there's no longer any difference between the way things appear and how they really are. They become the same when you achieve enlightenment. And this completes the transformation in its fullest sense as well. Transformation as such is present from the first bodhisattva level onwards, but it is at this final level that ultimate transformation is accomplished. Ultimate transformation means all stains, even the most subtle imprints that these stains have left in the mind, are totally purified. And it is explained in the Mahayana that when one achieves this ultimate transformation, then Buddha realms and enlightened forms appear limitlessly. And there are 10 aspects of transformation. These I will explain to you tomorrow night. The translator says we have 20 more minutes, so we have 20 minutes for your questions. If you have any questions, please ask.
Rinpoche, can you explain after the complete transformation takes place what suchness, how it appears?
Nejur tartukpe, tartukpa. Mundu gyorne dejinyi kande nangido.
Nenjon tarto bekaso lovundra betrama nyomombedra ba hizidra ba pakchada jeba.
The way that it's explained is that transformation means you clear away all of the obscurations that prevent you from realizing the true nature of mind. These obscurations fall into two main categories. First are what are called the klesha obscurations, or the obscurations of the mental afflictions, of the disturbing states of mind. You clear those away. And then the next are called the cognitive obscurations, obscurations to omniscience. And so you clear all of these away together with the most subtle imprints that they've left in your mind stream. And then what you realize is the true nature of mind that is beyond all concept of what it might be. So that's what you realize. Your realization then is inexpressible, because it's a realization of what is inconceivable, what is beyond the conceptual mind's ability to describe. And as a result of that, it is explained that you have limitless, pure appearances manifesting, limitless Buddha realms, limitless enlightened forms. What you're realizing now is, in a completely perfect way, is just what has been described in the simplest manner in the section about the defining characteristics of pure being, the true nature of mind that is beyond perceived and perceiver. The true nature of mind that is beyond there being anything to express and any means of expressing it. So that's what's genuinely happening from the perspective of genuine reality, is it's beyond all dualistic concepts and expressions. But from the perspective of relative reality, then the bodhisattvas, male and female, when they're on the bodhisattva path, make aspiration prayers to be of benefit to others, to help others to realize this too. And so, at the time of attaining enlightenment, especially, then there are, in conventional reality, limitless, countless emanations of the one who has achieved enlightenment that help guide others to the same fruition. And the way that Gyawa Gutsangpa, the great master, describes this enlightened activity is in a verse in his song called The Eight Flashing Lances, when he sings, "Prayers of aspiration, long sent, wakening. Whatever is done, contributing to benefit. Effortless, spontaneous performance. These are three that make activity fully free, like a lance that's flashing free in the open sky. Through the power of the bodhisattva's past aspiration prayers, now at the time of enlightenment, they totally, all these aspiration prayers wake up. And activity is completely for the benefit of others in a way that is effortless and natural. From the very beginning of the Mahayana path, the beginning of the Mahayana path is bodhicitta. And so that means that you aspire to attain enlightenment for the benefit of limitless sentient beings. And then the male and female bodhisattvas, all the way along their path, keep making aspiration prayers that they can be of benefit to all sentient beings, their friends, their enemies, to everybody. And these aspiration prayers continue to grow in their power until when the bodhisattva attains enlightenment, they totally wake up. Power of all of these aspiration prayers manifests perfectly as limitless, unceasing, effortless, spontaneous activity for the benefit of all sentient beings. And so, for example, if we look at the story of the noble lady Tara, then first she was, many eons ago, a princess whose name was Yeshe Dawa, the moon of wisdom. And she gave rise to bodhicitta and meditated in the samadhis of love and compassion, and out of that used her wealth, the wealth of her kingdom, to practice generosity to those in need. And so she satisfied the needs of many, many people in her land. And she made the aspiration prayer at that point to always be of benefit to sentient beings in a woman's form and to attain enlightenment in a woman's form. And so now, since she is a noble being, she is able to manifest in countless forms, the most well-known of which are the 21 Taras, but there are countless others. And they all, due to her aspiration prayers, perform the enlightened activity of benefiting others. And along her path, she made aspiration prayers to be able to protect sentient beings from what are called the 8 kinds of fear or the 8 kinds of danger. Also, there are 16 kinds of danger. And she made aspiration prayers that she would be able to protect them in a way that was swift, in a way that demonstrated courage. And so now she has these names. She is called Tara, which means the liberator, the swift one, the heroine. These are all epithets of Tara. And there are many stories about how she protected individual sentient beings who supplicated her from these 8 and 16 kinds of fear. And there are different kinds of aspiration prayers you can make. Like, for example, the medicine Buddha made the aspiration prayer to relieve sentient beings of the suffering of sickness. And as a result of that, his enlightened activity takes that direction. And Amitabha Buddha, when he was an ordinary being, made aspiration prayers that when I get a Buddha realm, I want sentient beings to be able to come too. If they make pure aspiration prayers, I want sentient beings to be able to get in. Because the other Buddha realms of the 5 Buddha families are more exclusive. You can only get in if you're a noble bodhisattva. But in Sukhavati, even ordinary sentient beings can get in if they make pure aspiration prayers to be able to reborn there. That's a result of Amitabha's special aspiration prayers that he made. Other sentient beings, when they are practicing on the bodhisattva path, whether they're male or female, they make aspiration prayers to be able to alleviate the suffering of poverty. And so their enlightened activity has the direction of that. So please see that there are different aspiration prayers that you can make, and these different aspiration prayers result in different forms of enlightened activity. And sing this verse about enlightened activity that is like a lance flashing free in the open sky. It's one of Gyalwa Gutsangpa's 8 flashing lances. If you don't know the words of this song and you don't have a song sheet, then please write it down. Prayers of aspiration, long sent, wakening. Whatever's done, contributing to benefit. Effortless, spontaneous performance. These three make activity unhindered, like a lance that's flashing free in the open sky. I'll sing it once and then we can sing it together. Prayers of aspiration, long sent wakening, whatever's done contributing to benefit, effortless, spontaneous performance, these three make activity unhindered. Like a lance that flashes free in the open sky. Prayers of aspiration, long sent wakening, whatever's done contributing to benefit, effortless, spontaneous performance, these three make activity unhindered, like a lance that flashes free in the open sky. Prayers of aspiration, long sent wakening.
Yeah, that Mulam Jiggy, Mulatip and Mulam Jig, Jaggery. Said the sitting name it. Tanjur deji longju din sema tabi kenga so janne chun chula chebar jo tene yendon se par jo ti chike de malare to sori sinam chimbore chera so chi manam de ga
so. Now we should close by making an aspiration prayer. This aspiration prayer was one made by the Lord of Yogis Milarepa himself, so it carries with it great blessing. Please write it down so then we can sing it together. May we live long and be free of illness. Enjoy freedom, great resources, and happiness. Next life, may we meet in the pure realm. May we always practice Dharma and benefit beings. Take some.
Tengato, Serena Gagando, Name in a Gagando, Tene Tanjo, Deje Lonjo, Dang Dena Gagando, Lonjo Mena, Simjin La Roba Jacimbozo to Human, Deje Lonjo, Dandena Gagando, Sender Hene, Tene Hangando J, Jedro Nam Chunyam de Sena, Tene Yabudo, Teta Mayamba, Tene Yindon Robajo.
We would all like to live long, and while living long, to be free of illness, and while living long and being free of illness, to enjoy freedom and great resources. The more resources we have, the more benefit we can be to others, and to enjoy happiness. And when we die, next life, to be reborn in the pure realm, not alone, but together with our Dharma friends, and to always practice Dharma and to benefit beings. So that's why this prayer is so great, because it gives us everything we want.
May we live long and be free of illness, enjoy freedom, great resources, and happiness. Next life, may we meet in the pure realm. May we always practice Dharma and benefit beings.
Sonam yeshe lejung damba kunye to parshu.
Menjo lembo kuye.
Tashisho yen la trucho sunge tashisho. Tadra dreme toche tashisho. Gyalwe kusung toche tashisho.
Nden